Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. I am your host, Dan Roberts, rolling with one of our stable of highly reliable co-hosts today, one Michael Kajowski, filling in for JJ Bryce. As many of you listeners at home know, during the course of the season, JJ and his family have been dealing with some private health issues. The good news is his family is on the mend. We send Maya, we send Theo, we send JJ our love, we send them our best as they heal up and get through the time that they're going through as a family. And JJ will be back post-bye on the pod to give you the awesome analysis that you have been so used to over the past 5 years. But we're very fortunate today to have one Mike Kajowski here with us. And it's really, I think, appropriate, Mike, that you're joining us at this time. Bills Mafia, as you may know from reading the interwebs and the social media, we're in our feelings a bit. After two straight losses, one to not only a hated rival in the Patriots, but a hated rival that also basically is having a better time with our ex-girlfriend than we ever had with them when they were in our house. Of course, I'm talking about Stefon Diggs. And then the dismantling that we all saw in primetime on Monday night at the hands of a young but highly talented, highly athletic Atlanta Falcons group. Cujo, we kind of joke offline that you are the Mr. Brightside of Bills Mafia. Not only do you bring a ton of energy to your fanship, but you are also very well known for like going into the depths of the worst places where you can find Bills Mafia on social media and literally try to talk them off the ledge. So we thought, rather than giving the typical analysis that you're getting out there from the Falcons game for the Bills at the bye, where it's like trade for this guy, trade for that guy, we wanted to bring in our own Mr. Brightside and you, Cujo, to help us talk Nervous Mafia off the ledge. All right. Now, I want to jump right into it. And I think before we do, a little historical context is important to remind our listeners of. The Bills have been here before. This is the cycle of sort of this inevitability that they're in, where they start the season hot. They hit a 2-3, even 4 game skid in the middle of the season, the second quarter of the season, where everything looks like they're less talented than the other team. They've got worse coaching than the other team, the whole nine yards. Eventually, they pull it together post-Halloween when the football really matters. And then we've been fortunate enough to see the Bills in the playoffs for many consecutive years. So my first question for you, Cujo, as you begin the process of working Bills Mafia through our feelings, is this the same old Bills squad? And can we assume that they're going to get it together like they have in the past few years? Or is this different for some reason in your mind? And is there actual peril ahead for this team?
Great question, Dan. And hello, everyone. Great to be here again. I have to say, it's definitely not the same Bills squad, right? I think this year rolling in, the vibes are really positive. Whereas last year, the vibes were, oh, this is definitely not their year. And then all of a sudden, by the end of the year, it was like getting to say, I told you so. And the famous video right before the playoffs, right, where they just recapped all the hate and all the talk. So I would say quiet down the noise, Bills Mafia. Turn it down. Turn off the feedback loops. Yes, we all need to vent, right? But let's separate that from the perspective that we have. We still have Josh Allen. We still have James Cook. We still have 4 wins. The last time we went 5-0, I looked this up before this pod because I'm not the biggest stats guy. I was trying to impress you, Dan. Last time we went 5-0 was 1991, right? We've gone 4-0. I think that was in 2020. But we had to expect a loss coming up. So I think that this isn't as dangerous as it feels. I think the coincidence of losing twice in a row, those two things are related. And I'm really, what you said about Diggs and the ex-girlfriend, like, I felt the knife turning when you said that my side, because yeah, it was like that. And I think that had something to do with it, man. I think his vibes, you know, stunk up the joint. And I think it was that combined with, it was our Icarus moment. We got too close to the sun. Okay, we got too excited. We had all the reason to be excited. Like, if we had lost the first game of the year, you know, the tone up until that point would have been totally different. And even after we lost to the Patriots, if Kansas City had lost that same week, you know, we wouldn't have been as devastated again. So be careful, you know, comparison's the theft of joy. And, you know, we still have so much going for us. And if anything, you know, the whole thing with Diggs and New England is like a new storyline. It's like we needed a new villain. Miami was too easy. You know, it seemed like the Chiefs were falling apart. And then the refs had to come back and help them again, you know. And, you know, we got past Baltimore. So, you know, we need a new enemy. We need a new, I don't want to say enemy. I want to say villain. Because it's more playful, right? Still football.
Exactly. Your Icarus moment comment, I think, carries a couple of different meanings for me. I mean, I think, yes, I think, and we experienced this in 2021 or 2022, where the Bills were just bandied about as the Super Bowl favorites. The Von Miller signing comes through, like they're everyone's number one team preseason. And you could feel the weight of expectations kind of crippling that team. And I feel like it was the same thing this season. Add to the fact where we were kind of playing with fire through, other than the Jets game, the remainder of the four games that we won. I mean, it wasn't convincing against lesser competition. And you could see some of the warts on this offensive scheme. You could obviously see the issues game in and game out on the defensive side of the ball. And I think to see it come crashing down in the way that it did is why a lot of Bills fans are spinning out. But to your point, if you were paying attention through the first four games, you saw the inevitability of this happening. And if you've been paying attention to the way the Bills play the game, the way they roll out their scheme slowly throughout the course of the season on both the offensive and the defensive side of the ball, you could kind of see this coming too. I also love the fact that you just used Icarus moment on a pod about football. Shows how well educated you are. But again, you're right.
Thank you.
It's tough. It's tough to go undefeated. And there's a lot of parity in the NFL this season. And anybody can beat anybody. And we see it happen literally every week, right? The only winless team in the league right now is the Jets. And even they've come close on a couple of occasions, most notably in the first week against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So listen, man, everybody's going to get their win at some time. You can't always predict when it's going to be, and everybody's going to take an L. It is hard to go undefeated for any stretch of time. And I think your words carry a lot of wisdom to it, and that, listen, we've been here before. It's hard to go 4-2, especially with the deficiencies the squad has. There is definitely a lot that you can isolate and take away that is positive. So that segues us into, I think, the next question I have for you. So we're not a reaction pod, but me and JJ always like to break down some of the lessons learned from the previous game the Bills played and apply it to the game they have coming up. Now, this is a bye week for the Bills, so there is no game preview this week. But I still think it's worth taking a look at that Falcons game from a 30,000-foot view. And I want to ask you this. Is there anything, despite kind of like your positive outlook, that you saw during the Falcons game that you think other teams are going to be able to replicate in order to handle the Bills? Or was this just a bad matchup, man? I mean, listen, the Falcons have been drafting at the top of the NFL draft for many, many years. They've got first round picks in Drake London, Bijan Robinson, Michael Penix, all who had their heyday against the Bills on Monday. And then they've got several first round draft picks and savvy free agent signings like Jesse Bates all over the defensive side of the ball as well. Is this just the case of the Bills running up against a more talented team? Or do you think there is something, a larger concern to take away from the way the Bills got beat against the Falcons?
I think the Bills beat themselves.
Interesting.
I think the Bills beat themselves both games. More clearly in the Patriots game, but the penalties.
Definitely.
And the risks, it felt to me as if we were taking big risks throwing the ball when we had some easier decision-making that would have kept us on the field, would have kept the momentum, would have got the first downs. And we were taking, maybe it was, I don't know what the process was, but I was trying to get some bigger plays going. But I think we beat ourselves. Despite that team having more strength than even I was expecting, like I don't think about the Falcons very much. I don't know too much about them as compared to, you know, teams in our division. So I think despite their strength, the Bills still beat themselves. And that's why we're all upset, is because everyone still expected the Bills to win. You know, and I think coming off of another game that, again, at home. We expected to win, you know, in our house. We're going to show Diggs what's up. You know, it's prime time. And we ate it. I mean, big time. And that was, I don't know the number of penalties, but that was.
It was 11.
Between that.
11 in the Patriots game.
And those are big ones too. But the injuries is also a big part of this story. So, you know, we're banged up. We're real banged up. And then, you know you and I were talking about this before. So I think Cook, you know, and some of the fact that he, that they didn't utilize their weapons, they didn't tailor the playbook enough for the weapons that they had left.
That piece, yes.
You know, they didn't make enough adjustments. Maybe they had a game plan and it had to change and they were forcing a square peg into a round hole. But there's something, man. Maybe Josh and Haley are fighting. Something happened. That's kind of my other secret philosophy. Josh is a married man now. It's like, you know, when it's like stunt, like daredevils. It's like they don't have a family. They have no consequences. Then all of a sudden they fall in love and it's like, well, I can't risk it anymore. I can't be a race car driver anymore because, you know, I have something to lose now. You know, maybe he's going through that. It's tough being married first year. And you're the star quarterback, and now you're on all the commercials too. Like, it's, you know, it's even more pressure than he's used to handling. So, you know, yeah, maybe he cracked up a little bit, but he'll come back stronger and absolutely devastate, you know.
Dude, I love the top level psychoanalysis that's going on here. And as a married man, I can absolutely speak to the yes. The minute you get married, you know, Josh has said this in his interviews too, like you do start to think of yourself as something that's a piece of something bigger than yourself, right? And he said as much. He's like, you know what? Maybe I don't just need to be a football player. And I think that's great growth for him. But dude, the point you brought up about Cook and not tailoring the playbook, I think speaks so strongly to why Bills Mafia feels so, I don't want to say cheated over the past two games, but it feels like we left meat on the bone for sure.
For sure.
Dude, me and JJ, we have been begging for early down play action shots down the field to stretch out defenses and just decompress the line of scrimmage a little bit. First play of that Falcons game, I literally levitated off my couch with joy when I saw them roll out 12 personnel and then take a play action shot on first down for 45 yards to Josh Palmer. I had an out of body experience. I was so happy. And then they just kind of left it on. They just left the rest of those pages of the playbook kind of somewhere else for the rest of the game. Same thing with James Cook usage, which I for his entire stretch with the Bills have not understood this running back rotation. I thought they had finally figured it out because he was playing more snaps in the first five games of the season. And then on that Falcons game, you're rolling out Ty Johnson in your third down package. Like the drop off between Cook and Ty Johnson is so significant. And add to the fact, as you mentioned, they lost weapons throughout the game. Palmer goes out. They already didn't have Kincaid in the game. Like at some point, you've got to decide as a coaching staff, who are your weapons? Who do you want opposing defenses to be afraid of? And then how do you accentuate and take advantage of that fear and scheme something for your top weapons that is going to make defenses, put defenses in conflict? And Brady failed to do that, I feel like, in the Pats game. And then most noticeably in this Falcons game, like at the end of the day, if you think Shakir and Cook and Coleman are your best weapons, figure out how to keep them on the field together and figure out how to maximize them. And I think that was the piece of frustration why we're all spinning out, because listen, there's been a lot of talk that we're devoid of talent. I don't think that's the case. I do think we're a guy short in the wide receiver room for sure. Right. But you're not maximizing the talent that's already on the roster. Like I had a great conversation on social media with a listener today who, you know, I just made this big argument, laid out some stats. I was like, put Keon Coleman in the slot. He can't get off press coverage. You're using him at an 84% clip in a wide alignment on the outside. Move him to the slot. Put him in a stack formation. Get him off the line of scrimmage so that he's not the first one receiving contact and press from an opposing DB, and give him a little bit of separation room right off the line. And, you know, a person asked, I think it was a very valid question, like, okay, cool. But if he plays the slot, like, who's going to play on the outside? And I kind of ran through it. And at the end, I was like, listen, we're all clamoring for the Bills to trade for Chris Olave, the wide receiver from the New Orleans Saints. Olave only plays on the outside about 59% of his snaps. So what? We're going to trade for him and then we're going to put him on the X island that we have Coleman on instead. Like, Olave is not effective there either. So at some point, regardless of whether it's not a dude you trade for or a dude you have on the roster, there is meat still on the bone with this scheme and this playbook where you could be better maximizing the talent that's already on the roster. And that piece, the piece that you were speaking to earlier about, I think is the thing that has us crashing out so hard and why it has us crashing out so hard. But listen,
agree. And maybe yeah, Joe Brady's playing, maybe he's playing 3D chess. Okay. As Mr. Brightside, maybe he's playing 3D chess and maybe, you know, we just don't know the grand scheme and, you know, maybe there was a couple tricks that didn't pop, and so it just looks worse than it is, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe they were testing some stuff out, and maybe they're coming off the bye. I'll ask you this question. Do you think we're going to see a different look, either defensively or offensively, after the bye, like dramatically different where the other teams haven't seen yet this season?
I think on the defensive side of the ball, it's almost definite, because they've kind of been hedging their bets on the defense that, listen, you're not going to see the full version of what this Bills defense can do until they get all their pieces back after the bye. Michael Hoyt, whatever you think he's going to be worth, Larry Ogunjobi, who I don't have really high hopes for, but now, especially with Sanders on IR, he's an important depth piece on the defensive line. And then, of course, our number one draft pick this year, rookie Maxwell Hairston. Hopefully we get to see him in a little bit of athleticism in that CB2 spot opposite Christian Benford. So I think the Bills defense is going to look different just because A, it needs to. It's looked terrible. It can't look any more terrible than this. But B, you are going to get pieces, I think, that are going to help address some of the weaknesses they've had on defense. Like, the advanced metrics say that the Buffalo Bills defensive line, for the most part, the four-man rush in particular, has been really effective this year. The problem is coverage isn't holding up. So what do you bring back? You bring back a chess piece in Michael Hoyt, who, I mean, the LA Rams dude, they did some wild stuff with him, lining him up on the edge, lining him up on the interior, then dropping him into coverage because of his freaky athleticism. That's going to be a really fun piece for Babich and McDermott to play with, and it's going to help that coverage game, especially if Milano continues to be hurt. I mean, I see Hoyt, despite his size, is more of like a middle line, like old school middle linebacker type that the Bills are going to like decoy at the line a lot of times and not use him in straight pass rush situations and instead drop him back to coverage. And I think that's going to confuse a lot of guys and cloud a lot of their looks for opposing QBs. And I love that. On the offensive side, it has to look different. Like we said, they're not maximizing the talent they have on the roster almost to a point of stubbornness. I think you're going to see the snap share really rein in. And I think you're going to see Shakir out there for more than just 49% of the snaps per game. I think you're going to see Coleman in a different alignment across all the wide receiver spots. And I think you're going to see them try to push 11 personnel just a little bit more with some version of Coleman, Palmer, and Shakir out there. And then Kincaid hopefully back healthy as well. They still have one of the top three highest EPAs per play out of 11 personnel. They don't roll it out all that much because Brady loves these big condensed 12 and 13 personnel packages, and he loves to run the ball out of them. But at some point, you got to find a way to get your three best pass catchers out there or your four best pass catchers out there, and 12 and 13 personnel aren't going to do that. So I am hopeful it is going to look different because I think teams have kind of figured out this version of the Bills offense. And if they keep running it back in this way, they're just going to run into that same wall. And there's a couple of teams, dude, that they can do what the Falcons did to us. They can do what the Patriots did to us coming up. Tampa Bay, I think, is going to be a problem. Listen, we know the Chiefs in that history. We've got Philly down the line as well. I mean, it's going to have to look different. It's a great question. I want to flip this back on you and ask you, because you are, again, everything you say is so like soaked with this genuine positivity. Like, what have you seen, despite the struggles of the past 2 weeks, that you think should give Bills Mafia hope? I think it's scheme changes. I think that stuff coming. For you, what have you seen over the past 2 weeks that, despite all the negativity, should still give us optimism?
Commercials.
Commercials.
Josh Allen is on TV, and guess what that means? That means somebody else isn't. It's not an Allstate commercial every single time, right? So that gives me hope, right? Seems like that in and of itself, despite when it's double-edged sword, it's amazing when we're winning and then the commercial breaks, still Josh Allen. When we're losing, it hurts twice as bad. But, you know, that's love, baby. You know, we love Josh. That's how it goes. But at least we don't have to look at Patty Mahomes' ugly mug anymore. So that gives me more hope. Just that alone is like, let's count our blessings and take a moment to hold space for that, huh? Because how bad was that? Like, we can stomach a flash to T Swift or you know, Travis Swift or whatever is going on there. But, you know, so that gives me hope. Also, like, think of the other teams and, you know, what's going on with them. We could be the Jets, man. We're not. Oof. Thank God.
Sorry. You know, sorry, Jared. Could,
yeah. Like, we still have a good coach and a good GM, and we're going to get a new stadium and XYZ. Like, all that stuff's still true. Yeah, we had two ugly losses, and we wish we had them back. But it's going to be now the fodder, and especially this new, you know, storyline with the Patriots being, you know, like they used to be, except they seem a lot more beatable now, despite the last game. So, you know, now we've got some more motivation, whereas we had a little bit of hubris, and now we can replace that with that classic Bills grind and grit. And I'm pretty excited to see, you know, how strong they can be off the bye week, well-rested, you know, mentally recharged, and then with, you know, a lot of more depth. There's some good names in that list that's coming back. And even if we don't know what they're going to do, they're warm bodies that are not injured. So
yes,
it's going to help, like, no matter what.
Yes, I love that. Before we get into predictions after the bye, because, I mean, what would we be if we didn't do predictions sure to go wrong? Listen, again, your positivity is great. It's exactly what we needed in this kind of recap episode here. But despite all that, as a fan watching the product on the field, there has to be something you think the Bills need to tweak, be it a personnel move, a scheme move. I mean, the AFC is so wide open this year, dude. Like, yes, the Chiefs offense, when they get Rashee Rice back, it's going to be an absolute wagon, or at least it looks like it is. But that defense is very, very gettable this year, despite the fact that Spags is still one of the best guys calling plays in the league. The Ravens, like, we've seen what the start to their seasons looked like. I love what the Colts are doing, but Danny Dimes has been a journeyman QB for a reason. Like, the AFC is so gettable this year. With all that in mind, are there some moves, are there some changes you'd like to see the Bills make over the bye that you think will bolster their chances to stay in it and maybe ascend to the top in that one seed in the AFC?
Absolutely. I mean, it's already theirs. It's theirs to lose. And we begged for a running game. We have a running game. Let's use it. I think we get too hasty. We get a couple of jabs in. We go for the big haymaker, and we should, you know, pepper him up a little bit more. I think we could play. We're scoring a lot of points early, at least the first couple games, but running the ball and having a longer term game plan, beating him up, tiring him out, and then having Josh just absolutely trample him, you know, instead of he was going back to superhero mode. And we've seen him do it alone, okay, but, you know, that's a riskier game plan. And we prefer it when he doesn't have to be Superman Josh from the past. It's exciting, but it's high risk, high reward. Okay, we've seen it win, and now we've seen it, like, yikes, you know, that third interception, yikes, what, you know. But then, you know, rewind the first four games, how good do we take care of the ball? Amazing. So it's not broken, okay, just refocus. But I think we do need to make that adjustment for sure. Run. Excellent. And maybe there's a secret injury we don't know about, but run.
Yeah, I think that secret injury might be Terrell Bernard. He looks, I mean, the Bills were objectively better in that Falcons game when Bernard was off the field. I don't know if he's battling something nagging or not. It'll be interesting to see if he shows up on the injury report next week ahead of the Panthers game, but he definitely doesn't look like himself. All right, sir, we're going to finish this thing up strong with our standard prediction, sure to go wrong. I've got this in two ways for you. First, I'm looking for a short-term prediction from you. So coming out of the bye, the Bills are going to have the Panthers right off the gate in Carolina. Then they're going to welcome the Kansas City Chiefs to Highmark Stadium for a late afternoon window game in Buffalo. So give me your prediction. Bills versus Panthers, Bills versus Chiefs. What are the outcomes of those games coming out of the bye?
I think the Panthers game's got to be a bloodbath.
Yeah.
Like, it's got to be the blowout win that we wanted to see, I think, against the Pats. I think we wanted that blowout. And then all of a sudden, this quarterback that we weren't paying attention to, you know, showed up. So I think Josh has got to be mad enough by now. And everybody else has got to be motivated enough that the discipline is going to lock in and the penalties are going to go away. The bench strength is going to be there and they're going to go back to being overwhelming, you know, like coming off of the fourth game. I heard people saying a bunch of naive Bill stuff, like the word, you know, unstoppable, undefeated. Okay. And I'm all about being positive, but like, let's manage expectations here and be a little more humble, but there's still, you know, immense amount of hope. And I think Panthers is, hopefully a bloodbath, which then gives us the momentum we need to confidently face the Chiefs, who, frankly, I'm not as scared of as Baltimore when they're really cooking. So, you know, I think the playoffs is a different story, but during the regular season, you know, it's going to be a close game, but I don't know, didn't we like pull Josh in the fourth quarter last time we played him or something like that? Like, there was an easy game against them in the recent past. So I don't think we'll see that because they all of a sudden woke up from their slumber. So we'll see. They're inconsistent too. You know, they're not as the scary juggernaut that they once were. That now that's us. And, you know, we have to rise to the occasion.
Love that. No, I love that. All right, man. Final prediction. When it's all said and done and the dust settles on the 2025 Buffalo Bills season, where do they end up? In the playoffs, one seed, division winners, where does it all end for the Buffalo Bills this season?
Absolutely postseason. That's probably as far as I'm willing to go because I think at that point, it's any team's game and there's just so much that can change. But I think here's what I think happens. I think we need somebody else to beat the Chiefs for us in the playoffs. And we have them a good enough record to make that happen. I think we're on pace to have to potentially clinch a number one seed. I don't know if we have that anymore. So I think we're gonna need a favorable playoff alignment, if you will. Like where someone else can maybe take care of our worst enemy for us. And if that happens, then I think we're in the big game. What if not? I think it's a coin toss, baby.
Damn. Yeah. I think I agree. I think there's a lot of interesting teams in the AFC. Pittsburgh, I mean, they're 4-1 and no one's talking about them because I think people are over the Aaron Rodgers thing, but that's a squad that's playing really well. And that's it's a tough defense too, man. And Rodgers is still, laying it on guys in impossible positions.
He also looks like he's having a great time.
Yes.
Which is not good for anybody.
Just pisses me off. He doesn't deserve a good time. I don't want Aaron Rodgers to have a good time, man. You know, the Colts, again, I think they've got really good personnel. They just have not been able. They've not been able to hit on the QB, but Danny Dimes is doing enough and Steichen's scheme. You know, and the Chargers have already beat the Chiefs, even though they're really banged up, especially along the offensive line. I think Bills, Chiefs, neither defense is going to be able to stop the opposing team's offense. The Chiefs don't have, despite having Chris Jones and Trent McDuffie, what the Falcons have along the defensive line, what the Patriots have along the defensive line and in their secondary with Gonzalez and Davis. Like, I think, and I don't think the Bills have any chance of stopping Rashee Rice, Xavier Worthy, and Hollywood Brown. And Tyquan Thornton, who's absolutely come out of nowhere for them, is like their fourth best wide receiver and an unbeatable deep threat for the Chiefs. So yeah, I agree. I think whenever it gets into shootout territory with the Chiefs, you've got to lean Chiefs because they've been in that situation for so long and they know how to pull it out. So yeah, I'm with you for the most part. For me, I still got my hopes set for Super Bowl, but I know realistically it's probably going to be a solid playoff run. And then, you know, someone else will be holding up the Lombardi. But you know, that's also just me talking as I usually talk this time of year.
I don't agree with that. No, that's usually me.
That's how I talk. That's how I talk this time of year.
I'm not going to let us end on that because we have to believe. And hey, we've had way worse shots than this. So
we have,
we got a new stadium coming and we've got a lot of momentum. We're America's favorite team right now. That's my bold prediction. I really think we are. We're like lovable, huggable, and people are tired of Kansas City. So I think there's power in the people. And I think, you know, the people will be victorious.
Dude, that is Marley-esque to the point of perfection. I really appreciate that. All right, Cujo, before I let you go here, in addition to us working together in the entertainment industry, you are also a professional musician. Would love to give you the chance to shout out a couple of your socials. How can people reach out to you if they ever want to inquire about your services?
Yeah, thanks for that, Dan. I am a bassist, electric double bassist, band leader, spent a long time cruising the world, playing bass and having fun. And I'm in Syracuse now, doing freelance stuff, played Funkin' Waffles jazz jam. So jazz guys, if you're out there, I'm there a couple times a month usually, but you can find me at Cujo, K-U-J-O, Cujo Music. Most of my socials, you just type that in, you'll find me. CujoMusic.com is my website. You can see a bunch of my services. So I give lessons, I do arrangements for, you know, singers or bands, and a bunch of other stuff there. So, yeah, if you just want to cruise around and see some fun stuff I did at sea, CujoMusic.com. So yeah, thanks for the shout out, Dan.
Yeah, dude, no problem. And listen, thank you for stepping up. And thank you for keeping Bills Mafia level at this very, very difficult time we all going through. The positivity is always welcome on the pod, sir.
We needed it. Hey, it took me a day or two, but it's there.
Without a doubt. For all of you listening at home, as always, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We are back on YouTube as of this episode. Also find us on Apple and Spotify. And as always, go Bills.